I'm Mark Maron at 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, smart monkeys, tops and bottoms of all kinds, lovers of cows. How are you? How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing all right. How you doing, Mark Maron?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's Friday. I'm excited it's Friday. But I'll tell you something. You know, I slept hard last night. Do you ever just sleep so hard you wake up and you're like, did I sleep? What have I been doing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
I was much younger then and needed the money.
Come on. What is that? Oh, what does that have to do with it?
Hey.
I know what you're saying.
That's the hard sleep.
What are you doing this weekend, Riley? I'm excited.
Actually, I'm doing something that I am very excited about doing. I'm going to a reunion.
Get out of the drum corps?
Yep.
A drum corps reunion?
A drum corps reunion. There's like 130 people coming to this thing.
Do you bring your sticks?
No.
I'm sorry, man.
We don't play anymore. We just go to hang out.
You don't guys don't jam or nothing?
No.
Nobody brings their snare and goes, who's got theirs?
Nobody brings the drums anymore.
Come on.
You know,
those days are gone.
Those days are over.
My drumming days are behind me.
Yeah, but it's going to be a lot of fun because there's going to be so many people I haven't seen in so many years. And, you know, there are a couple of people that I march with that died in the World Trade Center, including the sister of a good friend of mine who also marched with us. So, you know, it's going to be that sort of thing, too.
Bit of sadness.
Yeah, a little bit of sadness, but a lot of joy.
I've never been to a reunion of any kind. I have not gone to any of my high school reunions. I don't know why. It's just every time I get the invitation, they track me down, and I see the names of the people who are organizing the reunion. I'm like, that's the reason why I hated high school. Those three people right there are the reason why I hated high school. Why would I go? You know, but there was also the issue of not wanting to go back, you know, because I didn't feel like I was enough of a success or I had anything to say for myself. Like I used to say to myself, I'm not going to a reunion until I do my first Letterman. And then, like, after I did Letterman, I'm like, I'm still not going because I'm not going because I don't want to be around. I don't know, man. My high school is huge, 3,400 kids.
I waited for a long time. It was like 34 years before I went to a reunion.
See that? Why?
Just because I didn't feel like it.
Come on, man.
I didn't feel like it. I was busy. I had other things to do.
Got to be deeper than that.
I had lost touch.
There's got to be a reason.
Why?
Because it's like, these people, not that they were an important part of my life, but for me it was very specific. I didn't want to go back and just be another schlub, sort of like, hey, what's going on? Not much. Here are my nine kids. I don't have kids, but I didn't feel like I had enough to show for myself, so I didn't want to go.
Hey, there's always something that you have to show for yourself. You're more successful probably than 99% of the people you went to high school with. What are you worried about?
Yeah, that's it. Maybe I should get a T-shirt that says, I'm more successful than most of you.
There you go.
I'm
be a hell of a way.
Hey, I'm here.
They'll make you reunion chair for the following year.
What are we going to do, Riley? This adapt or die policy is starting to drive me nuts. I mean, they're going to make it impossible for people to declare bankruptcy. They're going to try and you know take Social Security away in its guaranteed form. You can't. There are no jobs for anybody. They're restricting victims' rights with this tort reform. I just don't understand. Where the hell are people going to go, Riley?
What are people going to do? They are fighting a multi-front war, and the people that oppose all of this foolishness have to realize that and be prepared to fight a multi-front war.
Well, that's going to be a big theme of today's show. We're going to be talking to Michael Tomasky later about the possibilities of the fighting Democrats.
Yeah, you
about
go.
You know, getting past strategizing in terms of reaction and actually delving into our political philosophies and what actions can be taken. We're going to try and take to task some of these spineless Democrats in Congress and in the Senate a little bit and figure out what's going on there. We're going to talk about Hillary Clinton in the last hour in depth because I'll tell you, she's exciting me lately. I mean, in a political way.
Oh, very good.
I know a lot of people are accuser of moving towards the center, but I think there's a deeper strategy there, and I'd like to hear your feelings on that.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about Alan Greenspan. We're going to talk about Porter Goss. We're going to talk a little bit about Social Security and a little bit more about bankruptcy. We got a big show, and also we're going to have some funny. Like right after this break, we're going to have Morning Sedition Radio Theater. So enjoy. We'll be back in a few minutes. It's 11 past the hour. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people
on Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Work.
And now, the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
When last we left Mark, he had discovered that Crawford Ranch was nothing but Hollywood film scenery. So he headed for Los Angeles to find the film company, the mysterious Inauguration Studios.
People wonder why they call it the City of Angels. Maybe it's because it's full of so many lost souls. I staked out Inauguration Studios and watched them all come and go. All those wannabes with crazier dreams of success and Paul Wolfowitz staring at a brand new Atlas. That's when I saw him. Oh, my God. He walked right out of the studio. The robe. The beard. Was I the only one who saw this? It was Osama bin Laden.
Well, okay. If the executives reconsider, let me know.
Hold it right there, enemy of America.
This again. On top of everything else. Look, whoever you are, I'm not Osama bin Laden. You're only the 100th guy who's asked, okay?
Yeah, sure. That's what they all say. All those bin Ladens.
Look, I'm going to reach slowly into my pocket now and show you my studio ID. I'm an actor, okay?
It says your name is Tommy Friendly.
My real name is Rajay Srinivasan from India. I just play Osama bin Laden for Inauguration Studios. Well, I used to.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen you.
Well, certainly you have. Video clips, photographs, any time you see a villain for a movie or a documentary or a news program. 3 years ago, I was the hottest actor in Hollywood. Now I can't get arrested in this town.
You mean they're making...
Of course I can get arrested in this town, God knows. Try mailing a package when you're dressed like this.
You mean they're making propaganda in that studio?
Well, the client prefers to call it news.
So why aren't you working anymore?
Who knows? It's Hollywood. I once got fired from a commercial because I didn't look enough like a fruit roll-up.
I've got to hear what's going on. Can you get me in there?
And I lost 30 pounds for that part. I'll get you in. Oh, yes, sure. Just go down into this drain here. Follow this river of sewage, and when you come up, you're in the programming department.
Okay, thanks. Boy, all these actors trying to break into a studio, and it turns out you just have to swim through a mile of slime. I found myself in an air duct, looking through a vent at a meeting of executives. All of a sudden, into the meeting walks Michael Powell. Maybe he'd lead me to his dad.
Gentlemen, I call the corporate media conspiracy to order. Now, gentlemen, as you know, my employer wishes to have a new villain to overshadow Osama bin Laden. Someone the public can really despise, so let's hear your pitches.
How about the King of Saudi Arabia? They've got a pretty awful record of human rights abuses.
For reasons I am not at liberty to disclose, my employer does not wish to trouble the Saudi ruling family. Other ideas?
King Matswani III of Swaziland? He shops for $50 million jets while his people live in huts.
Is Swaziland any kind of threat to us?
Well, we could say they're building a really dangerous spear.
That's pathetic, Larry. Oh, we need another Saddam Hussein. We got to attack him when he hadn't even done anything to us. Remember when he had all those British hostages during the first Gulf War? He tried to be charming with this one kid on camera, and the boy just twitched like a paralyzed rabbit. God, he was a good villain.
Mr. Powell, something doesn't smell right.
Of course not. We're writing propaganda.
No, I mean something in the room.
Yeah, it's like sewage. I think it's coming from that vent.
Uh-oh. I'll call the janitor later.
That was close. Just gotta hold still and not give myself away.
Is that a cell phone? Damn it.
Hey, Mark, this is Blanche. Your assistant slash dog walker slash...
Blanche, why do you have to call now?
Yeah, there's somebody in there.
I got nowhere to go. Gotta kick out the vent and take this thing head on.
All right, you guys. This is a .44 Magnum, so nobody move. Powell, you and I are clearing out of here together.
Well, I wouldn't do that if I were you, Marin.
Why not? What could you do to me?
Well, I am in charge of the FCC. I could order your producer to end this episode right now.
Oh, yeah, sure, right. I'd like to see...
Why does the government want to make everyone forget about bin Laden? Why hasn't Mark changed the ringtone on his cell phone? And why would a sewer connect to an air vent? Isn't that just bad architecture? Find out next time when we hear Mark say...
Flash! They're coming for me!
I want to talk about our
next time on The Shadow Government. And stay tuned later for Morning Sedition Radio Theater's production of The World Yet to Come. Travel with us to the far, far future, all the way to the year 1997. Men fly about in jetpacks. Diseases have all been cured. Mutant androids have seized Brazil. And a woman named Ellen DeGeneres becomes the first openly gay woman to have her own sitcom. Let's see what Mark Riley and Mark Maron are talking about in this strange and distant world.
So, you want to catch a movie or something?
Nah, I don't think that's a good idea.
Why not?
Because we're not even going to meet each other for another 7 years.
Oh, yeah. Then what are you doing in my house?
Hey, that's my stereo!
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Womp womp. 21 past the hour, Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Good morning, where's my stereo?
I'll get it to you, man. I'm still getting it fixed.
Oh.
That's why I ran out of your house and broke the window with it. So let's get this out there. We've got a lot of listeners in New Jersey. For those of you who aren't in New Jersey or the New York area or even in Connecticut, why don't you just listen? We're going to preach a little activism here. But, you know, if you can make it and fly in 2 hours, sure, come on down. Protest George Bush's efforts to destroy Social Security. Bush will be appearing today at the Westfield Armory in Westfield, New Jersey, to pimp Social Security privatization. A protest is scheduled to begin there at 8:30 a.m. today. Go to njcitizenaction.org for info. That's njcitizenaction.org for info. Hey, Clutch Larson, do we have a link to that on our site? At morningsedition.com. You can go to morningsedition.com and also get access to that now. There are trains that go out there. If you're in the New York area, Connecticut area, New Jersey area, get information. NJCitizenAction.org. Show the president that you care.
And those, you know, those folks at New Jersey Citizen Action are doing some heavy lifting over there. 60,000 members they have in that organization.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
We should talk to those people at some point. We should have them into the show and see what they got planned for the, not just New Jersey, but maybe they're tapped into the nationwide activism network. Is there an activism network? There is. I guess MoveOn.org would be
MoveOn.org, but there are also individual organizations that operate in states all over America that are doing this kind of heavy work. They do seminars. They get people houses. They're multi-service.
We should get them organized and get them all on the same page. There's an idea. Get Howard Dean on the phone. Okay, here we go. And this is interesting. Porter Goss, who was given the job of head of the CIA.
Yes.
And he was an ex-spy. He'd gunned for this job. He wanted this job. And now he feels a little overworked, Riley.
He says, the job I'm being asked to do, the five hats that I wear, are too much for this mortal.
What, more paper? Come on, what am I supposed to do? How do I work this mouse thing?
I was just a congressman from Florida, and then they plucked me to do this. Porter Goss thought he was going to get the job that John Negroponte got.
What's my password again?
Intelligence czar? No, that's not it.
Well, that's right. There's a little bit of sour grapes here. I mean, he's complaining. He's whining like a child, if I might say. And part of the reason, as you speculated before, was that he's mad. It's like, how come Negroponte gets to talk to the president?
Well, you know, let's listen to, well, we have a piece of Porter Goss, but I want to run a quote by you real quick.
Okay.
It's got a huge amount of ambiguity in it. Now, he's talking about his own job as director of Central Intelligence. I don't know by law what my direct relationship is with John Negroponte. That's a very interesting way of putting it.
Is that a cry for help? I mean, it sounds to me when you say something like that publicly, it's got a lot of ambiguity. I don't know by law what my relationship is with the dark minister of propaganda or of the death squad, John Negroponte. I don't know what my relationship is with him. It seems to me that if you're saying those kind of things publicly, you're basically saying, hey, buddy, hey, Bush, what do you got me doing here? Let's make this happen.
Yeah, and I remember now, he and Negroponte went to Yale together. So it's not, you know, they might even have a personal relationship, but by law, he doesn't know what he's doing. Now, we have a...
They went to Yale together? Did they major in death squad?
I don't know.
What did they major in? Oh, man, that wasn't that great a joke. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Porter Goss, a few years ago, was interviewed for the movie Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yes.
And you know, even back then, this was long before he was named CIA director.
Yeah.
And he talked about, this is an outtake from Fahrenheit 9/11. He talks about his qualifications to be the director of Central Intelligence.
I couldn't get a job with CIA today. I am not qualified.
No.
I don't have the language skills. You know, my language skills were romance languages and stuff. We're looking for Arabists today. I don't have the cultural background, probably, and I certainly don't have the technical skills, as my children remind me every day, Dad, you got to get better on your computer. So the things that you need to have, I don't have.
What's my password? How do I get into the email here at the CIA? What CIA email? Is it CIA.org? Or somebody help me.
Hey, they're trying to go to the CIA website. It has that this page cannot be found on it when it comes to Porter God. You know, a lot of this, Mark, centers around who briefs the president on a daily basis. Will it be Porter Goss or will it be John Negroponte or will it be some combination of the two?
The dude says it's taking him 5 hours a day to prepare a briefing. He's like, I just lost my work again. Where are you headed to save? Where's the save thing? Oh, the little, what is that? It's a disc? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, you know, they made a little money off his appearance. You know, he was, happened earlier this week in an address at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. About 200 people were there to hear Porter Goss speak, and they paid $45 a pop. The public
did. This is an interesting thing. This is a power struggle, and they're going to have to figure out, you know, who does what between Negroponte and Porter Goss. And I think it seems like, am I wrong in saying that this is sort of a cry for attention?
It is a cry for attention. It's also a cry and a way to point out the fact that the agency that Porter Goss has, the CIA, is completely demoralized.
It's full of bitter people.
Absolutely.
People, I mean, we've talked to the ex-guy, that guy, Michael Shearer, the guy who wrote to Imperial Hubris. I just read a piece of his in Atlantic. He said that they're never going to crack al-Qaeda until they get Arab translators, until they get spies within the al-Qaeda organization. And they're also bitter because they've been used as a scapegoat. It's full of just miserable people over there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now the head is miserable.
They've been played for suckers is what it boils down to. Now, when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk a little bit about George W. Bush and intelligence because he took a trip out to the CIA the other day.
Bin Laden's back in the news.
There we go. When we come back here on Air America Radio...
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hi.
Past the hour, smart monkeys. Good morning. Get out there and protest Bush's efforts to destroy Social Security if you live in the New Jersey, New York, Connecticut area at the Westfield Armory in Westfield, New Jersey, 8:30 a.m. today. For details, njcitizenaction.org or you can go to morningsedition.org for a link. That's today. Get out there. Get involved. Morningsedition.com. Sorry, I work here. So anyways, Mark Riley... The Supreme...
Hey, it's your money they're messing with, all right?
I'm Porter Goss. How do I turn this off? What does restart mean? I can't do this. Anyways, as the Supreme Court considers whether government buildings can display the Ten Commandments, we always know that we can count on Justice Antonin Scalia to vote for God, which must have been why Ramon shows up in judicial robes today and a yarmulke on, whatever that means.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so here's he brought us Antonin Scalia's Palm Pilot for today. 6 a.m., early morning workout. Run up to top of the hill, lift tablets overhead, and yell, "People of America, I give you these commandments to use in the name of George W. Bush." Then smash them on the sidewalk. 8 a.m., call president, ask to speak to Burning Bush. Enjoy laughter. 9 a.m., reread Ten Commandments. Resist temptation to covet my neighbor's wife, house, or ass. Especially the ass. 10 a.m., court in session. To impress other justices, change my walking staff into a serpent. 10:30 a.m., right decision. If we remove the Ten Commandments from public buildings, the next thing you know, we'll have to remove the bizarre Masonic imagery from the dollar bill. And that's un-American. 2 p.m., suggest that mandatory school prayer could help get this issue resolved. All right. 4 p.m. Threaten ACLU lawyers with a plague of locusts and, if necessary, the death of their firstborn. 10 p.m. Get out binoculars. Covet neighbor's wife. Shame. So much shame. All right. So, Bush, the AWOL fake Christian blow monkey puppet, the Cheney regime's neocon death cult, is at CIA, the CIA Central Intelligence Agency, trying to kiss a little Porter Goss patootie. And he's there, I think, to... it seems to me what he was doing, Riley, if I'm not mistaken, is he was basically saying, don't worry, we still got work to do over here. I still like you guys.
Well, yeah, what he was doing was trying to paper over all of that bitterness and all of that despair that's in the agency that we just talked about before the break. So he comes over, he strokes them a little, tells them they're doing a fabulous job when he knows good and well they're not, but it's okay.
Yeah.
And he's also trying to smooth Porter Goss's hurt feelings. Somebody must have told him in a briefing that Porter Goss said he was overwhelmed by the gig, and who's going to be reporting to the president every day? Will it be me or will it be my classmate Negroponte?
Me.
Exactly. And George Bush is like running a classroom. Say, okay, it's you.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is he goes over there, strokes Porter Goss, and then calls into question his previous statement that Negroponte was going to be the one responsible for the daily intelligence briefing. That's the amazing thing about all this.
That's so weird to me that Porter Goss and Negroponte were both classmates at Yale. They studied covert operations. They majored in deposing legitimate presidents in Central American countries.
They majored in special forces, black ops.
But it's just interesting to me that not only it's not so much that they're just doing a bad job at the CIA, but everybody under Goss who was there, who hasn't left.
Yeah, because he alienated a lot of people to begin with. Yeah.
They're bitter. They hate this guy. So he's out there and he's touting that the Bin Laden search is still on.
Well, he touted that twice yesterday. It's an amazing thing that he did. He goes, first of all, to the swearing, the swearing in of Michael Chertoff as yet another, the intelligence czar.
Son of Satan. Chertoff in Russian, son of Satan or owned by Satan.
Yeah. Now, he's the new Homeland Security boss.
Yeah.
I don't want to call him the intelligence czar because that's Negroponte's name.
That's right.
Now, Michael Chertoff, of course, is now the third piece in this intelligence puzzle that only George W. Bush seems to know how to put together. How are these people going to interact with each other? Who's going to be responsible for the money? And then, of course, you've got the specter of the demon Donald Rumsfeld looking over all of this saying, I got the money now. Come get it.
Oh, my God. It must have been like there must have been a private meeting between Bush and Goss. Goss just like, fighting tears going, now, what am I going to do? What am I supposed to do here? This is stupid.
Right, if Bush really wanted to get even with him, you know what he'd say?
What?
Go get Bin Laden.
we can't
find him.
I can't speak Arabic. You set me up. This is stupid. How do I turn this on?
Farsi? What the hell's Farsi?
Oh, no.
Well,
too much paperwork. Call my kid. I need to figure out how to change my screensaver.
Bush made a little history yesterday, though, Mark.
Yeah.
Because he, for the first time in months, invoked the name of Osama bin Laden. Remember that during the campaign last year, he downplayed. I don't know where he is. Who? Osama who?
He invoked it twice.
Yes, he did invoke it twice. Now, he says in the spot that we're about to hear, which was at the Chertoff swearing in, that yes, the Bush administration will get Osama bin Laden.
We're on a constant hunt for bin Laden. We're keeping the pressure on him. Keeping him in hiding.
Okay, so now he's taking credit for not having captured the guy.
How stupid does he think we are?
Yeah, he's in hiding. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the little people.
Yeah, he said that with pride. Like, but you said you were going to catch him. And they know where he is.
Think he's down below the press room in the White House.
I do. I think that they've got a room for Bin Laden beneath the White House, and they just go down when they need him to chew it a little tape, to do his little dance and scare people. But the more interesting thing to me, as we talked about him throwing a bone to the CIA, or trying to at least, with language, is the second soundbite is he talks about Al-Qaeda in a very different way than I've ever heard him talk about
before.
And it's kind of interesting, and it's a little creepy in a different way. It's not creepy in the way they used to present him as like, this guy is the personification of evil. Mm. Al-Qaeda, the terrorist that threatens the world. Listen to this soundbite, or as we say, piece of sound or clip. From Bush yesterday at the CIA.
If Al-Qaeda was a court structured like corporate America, you'd have a chairman of the board still in office,
but many of the key operators would no longer be around. It was the executive vice presidents, the operating officers. We're not resting on our laurels. We've had great successes, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't stop. And one of the reasons I came out here was to remind people that we've had great successes. I appreciate their successes.
But the corporation still exists. I've never heard him, you know, he didn't demonize them. And actually, in what was an attempt at a sort of humorous metaphor, he categorized Al-Qaeda as a functioning business entity.
Yeah, he did.
In some respects, you know, something to be reckoned with on a completely different level than, you know, he's used to characterizing them as. It's very interesting because in Peter Bergen's book, Holy War Incorporated, that was really, they were very aware of corporate structure. And it is, you know, I don't know what Bush is talking about because recently, I mean, within the last month or so, you know, Osama bin Laden announced that, you know, he is going into a partnership with al-Zarqawi in Iraq, and that has been substantiated. And it's a confirmation of a new partnership within the Al-Qaeda corporation.
And Bush acknowledged it yesterday.
Right.
What's interesting about what we see happening here, Mark, mm-hmm. is that remember that they, at a certain point, a lot of people in the media, a lot of people in law enforcement put organized crime in that same corporate structure. The commission,
sure.
the capo, the tutti capi, and the whole, you know, conciliary, the whole nine yards. Now, organized crime obviously cooperated in putting it that way, but I think Bush is kind of using that whole organized crime template to now say that Al-Qaeda is a lot like organized crime. They're structured. They have, a hierarchy. Now these two people are getting in contact. It's kind of like Lucky Luciano and Lefty Buchholz.
I guess I wonder what the etymology of characterizing it that way is, because it seems to me that they were told that you better talk about us like this or else they became incapable of hiding the fact that they did business with these people. You know, that yeah. organized crime became organized crime because it was so clearly infiltrating, you know, all the local governments, like especially in New York and in Boston, that there were, and everyone knew it.
Yeah.
So there was no way, you know, they weren't terrorists. They weren't, you know, a threat to society. They were like organized crime because they were in cahoots with the legitimate business community.
Absolutely. And at a point, if you start looking at the Bush family links to the bin Laden family, which we don't have to necessarily go into
sure.
here, the fact of the matter is that you might tend to look at it that way.
So now all of a sudden he's affording Al-Qaeda the respect that they demand as a business entity.
That's right. We may be after you, but you, Osama, are a man of respect. Is that what Bush is saying? Mark, the thing that really stands out in all this
yeah.
is that the guy is able to rewrite history as he goes along. He goes from where he's wanted, dead or alive. We're going to get him, dead or alive. This is 4 years ago now.
Absolutely. I know exactly what you're saying.
And
yeah.
now we come to this point, and it's like, well, he's part of a corporate structure, and we've heard some of the corporate structure. And, yeah, he's talking to one of his chief operatives in Iraq. But, you know, we've got him. We've got him. And, you know, you should thank us. Because they're in hiding.
And I think what he's playing on, not only is that he's building, he has a lot of faith in people's short-term memory, that he just thinks they really are, they do this all the time, this administration. They just assume people will forget. And you know what? I think a lot of people do forget, but I also think a lot of people didn't even really know. I think that we have this weird psychological condition that's happening in this country. I think it's like sort of polling psyche, that very few people have opinions or knowledge of what's going on, but they're more than willing to say yes or no to just about any question.
Well, yes. Yeah, and
you
know what? Frank Luntz talks about the fact that politics is 80% emotion and 20% intellect. If George W. Bush can make his supporters feel good about themselves by what he's doing, whether it's on Social Security or Osama bin Laden, he's got him.
You just reminded me that we got to do some more of those Frank Luntz talking points to show how he basically assumes that everybody is stupid and that if Republicans want to be effective, all they have to do is simplify their language for stupid people, and then stupid people will go, oh, okay. But we'll do more of those, maybe at the top of the next hour, because I think we still got like five or six to go over. We've gone through about nine of them. When we come back, though, I think we should get into a little bit about Social Security, about Alan Greenspan's statements about taxes, and also that new ad, you know, from the same people that did the Swift
ad, yeah.
you know, about the AARP. We'll do that when we come back. 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your vlog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Hi. Yeah. Hey, it's 50 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Yeah.
On Air America Radio. So, Riley.
Where?
We're going to talk about Social Security here, about Alan Greenspan. I read this interesting Sidney Blumenthal piece that I wish I could find right now. I think it's got to be here somewhere. How do I turn this on? All right. Here's a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Ready? Write these down. To protest Bush's Social Security plan, organize Million Old Men March for June or August. Two, now that Martha Stewart is out of jail, persuade her to attack Bush's Social Security plan. See what happens when you put your faith in the stock market. See what happens. Three, to celebrate Women's History Month, hang huge blank canvas in nearest federal building. Call it America's Female President. Powerful. Four, Sunday is Rob Reiner's birthday. Sorry, that's Governor Rob Reiner. Huh? Who's with me? Anybody? Hello? Huh? Come on. Can we get on board with this? Five, today's phrase, just drop this into conversation. Yeah, I got some commandments I'd like to see posted in public buildings. Thou shalt not rip me off. Thou shalt stay the hell out of my business. Thou shalt not make commandments. What do you think about that, man? Wake up, sheeple. The church is the state. How do you like them apples,
yeah,
my
yeah,
friend?
Yeah.
So, Greenspan, being the Randian antichrist that he is, and completely willing to, you know, sell himself out to this administration because he thinks that they have the courage to actually apply the social Darwinism necessary to maybe perhaps kill the poor once and for all. Riley, tell me about this consumer tax and what it implies.
All right. This is a what he's talking about is supporting some form of consumption tax. Now, what most people see when they hear consumption tax.
Where did he say this? Let's set this up.
Okay,
I'm sorry. I should have said something. He talked yesterday.
Yeah, he spoke yesterday before the President's Advisory Panel on Federal Tax Reform. And, of course, tax reform is one of Bush's major policy plank initiatives, although we haven't heard that much about it, in this second term. Of course, it wasn't his first term, too. He didn't do anything. But,
right.
Hey, you know, let's
yeah.
be optimistic about
okay.
it. Greenspan says a national sales tax may not be such a bad idea. Now, Democrats and progressives generally have vehemently opposed the national sales tax because of the burden it places on the poor. Remember that national sales taxes are not progressive. So, in other words, a person that makes $1.5 million pays the same tax on a on a jar of peanut butter as somebody making $3 a day.
Okay, so it's a flat tax.
It's a national sales tax, and yes, it is a flat tax. It's not the same kind of flat tax that Steve Forbes was talking about with a flat tax on income.
Right. So this means that that no matter what you buy, you pay the same amount of tax.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
No, not no matter what you buy.
Okay.
No matter what your income.
Okay.
In other words, just like if you go and buy something here in New York, you buy a sweater.
Okay.
You pay the same amount of sales tax no matter what your income is.
Of course.
And that means that the poor pay a larger percentage of their lesser income than someone who's very wealthy who pays the same tax.
But that's the way these taxes work now.
Well, that's how some of those are state sales taxes,
right.
Not federal sales
so
taxes.
If it becomes a federal sales tax, that's on top of the state sales
exactly.
tax.
Exactly. It would be on top of the state sales tax, but it has also been used by a lot of supply-siders and now by Greenspan to say this is how we simplify the tax system. We knock out a lot of the income tax and shift the focus from income to outflow.
Oh, so that completely benefits the rich.
Yeah, because what it says is we are not going to tax what you make anymore. We're going to tax what you spend.
And wealthy people are like, oh, no problem.
No problem. We spend plenty.
Oh, that's great. That's great for us.
Well, yeah, because they know that in this kind of a national sales tax situation, they would make out like bandits. They would definitely make out like bandits.
You see, I've always sort of said, at least in the last couple months, in terms of the plans to extend military spendings and continue to bankrupt the U.S. government would force them to privatize programs, privatize social programs. And that seems to be, these guys are shamelessly doing that. I didn't realize that by, tax cuts, in relationship to the spending that the government is doing and the debt we're getting into, means that what happens if they continue to do those tax cuts is they starve federal programs.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
they starve them and thereby render them ineffective and easy to eliminate.
And right. And they say, we have to. We've got no choice. And
yes.
that's exactly what their big plan is they're intentionally bankrupting the country in order to serve their agenda.
Well, I mean, it's no accident that, for example, they look to cut all subsidies for Amtrak. Where does Amtrak service most frequently?
Washington, Connecticut,
the Northeast Corridor, states that are all blue.
Yeah, I get that, but it's so petty, and it compromises so many different levels of people. You know, it's not just blue people, it's not wealthy people. Everybody gets screwed on this because, you know, it will congest the cities. It's bad for business unless, you know, you have a car, you know, unless you're an oil guy, which these guys are. It's going to pollute the air more. It's just so petty and shameless and non-concerned with individual well-being.
See, one of the things I wonder about Greenspan is, now, he's saying that the way you can deal with the problem of the poor paying more for what they consume in terms of a national sales tax is by actually decreasing the tax on products that the poor buy. Now, you know how long it would take you to figure out exactly what products the poor buy you tax peanut butter less than you tax an automobile? I don't know.
You could just go into any 99-cent store. You can start there.
Yeah, I guess you could. But, you know, I mean, it is a wholesale shift, and you can't look at these things in isolation, Mark. You have to look at all of them together. You have to look at the Social Security thing. You have to look at the federal deficit. You have to look at the tax system the way it is now, and you realize that the time is right for Bush politically. And Greenspan, in this case, is just acting as Bush's surrogate.
It's interesting what they're doing, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, what I read in that Sidney Blumenthal piece, is that, you know, if they actually succeed in compromising Social Security, then what the Democrats will really be left with are truly marginalized, poor, desperate people. And they're assuming that that number is small enough that they will no longer be a threat. But on some level, it would, you know, it would really force the Democrats to honor what they consider their core beliefs to be. But as a political move, it marginalizes the entire Democratic Party on some level.
There are more people with 401ks in America today than belong to labor unions today. And the Republicans love it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Understand what that means. It means that people who have an interest in accumulating wealth are now having their priorities addressed first and foremost, before the poor, before working people.
I just want to say that I do shop at 99-cent stores occasionally.
So do I.
And you know what's weird about me? If it breaks, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this? Costs 99 cents. We're gonna play that ad by the Swift Boat Veteran people against the AARP after this.
After this, it's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, it's 6 past the hour. The show is Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
That's right. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning to all of you. We are in the middle of a conversation, Riley. I got to fix my headset. Oh, there
uh-oh.
I am.
There you go.
Just a little shorten it. You know, God forbid they fix something around here, like the door to the studio. Yesterday we couldn't get out of here. Did you see that?
Now we can't get in here.
Did you have that moment? You're like, oh man, I'm never gonna have to. I'm never gonna leave.
Yeah.
We're going to be on the air for 24 hours. How would that be, people? Mark and Mark for 24 hours. Oh, my God. I just got irritated.
This is the broken handles, man. These handles go about once every maybe 2 or 3 years, and it takes, like, some mechanical genius to come up and put them back on.
It's hilarious.
So
we're just up here going, help! Somebody help us! We're locked in the studio in New York.
Security!
Hey, look, if you live in the New Jersey, New York, Connecticut area, as far as Pennsylvania, even Washington, D.C., you got an hour. Look, protest George Bush's efforts to destroy Social Security. Bush will be appearing today at the Westfield Armory in Westfield, New Jersey, to pimp Social Security privatization. A protest is scheduled to begin there at 8:30 a.m. today. Go to njcitizenaction.org for info. The trains that go there, you still got an hour and a half. You can show up a little later. You can go to morningsedition.com. We've also got links to it. Get out there. Let's do this thing. Because you know how they're characterizing this, Riley. And it's weird how shameless and honest they are in the newspapers that anybody can read, on the news programs that anybody can see, that the one thing that they got right is that Bush and his cronies, the neocon death cult and the operatives therein, are saying, we got to problem in pitching this thing. We can't sell it properly. We can't sell the idea properly. You know, why do people accept that? Is America really, I know America is all about sales pitches and about looking for suckers and who's a mark and who isn't a mark, all right? But to be honest, that candid about the fact that it's sort of like the only problem with Social Security in Bush's view is that we've got to figure out a way to make the people believe this.
Well, he's going on a blitz now. He's going on, again, it's one of these magical mystery tour type things. And Mark, one of the groups that he is aiming directly at with this trip today and the next few days, black folks,
uh-huh.
Black retirees, he sees them as crucial to selling the Social Security plan. And, you know, Bill Fritz the other day kind of strayed off the ranch, the Senate majority leader,
uh-huh.
is saying, well, hey, I'm not sure it'll get passed this year. You saw how fast he got back in line, right?
2 days later, he's like, what did I say? No, we're going to make this happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. The weird thing is that this whole idea of the pitch, you know, here's something from Sidney Blumenthal, if I could quote him from his Salon piece.
Yeah.
For Bush and the Republicans, the problem is salesmanship. If only they had honed the pitch, convinced the wary customers that they really mean well, saving them from a bad investment and delivering a bargain, they will clinch their deal. Frank Luntz, a Republican consultant who has made a specialty out of wordplay, has advised them on how to make friends and influence people. In a memo circulated among the Republican leadership last month, which I have in my hand, folks, Blumenthal says he urged that Republicans appeal to emotions, not facts. The public, Luntz writes, wants empathy rather than statistical declarations. It is tempting to counterattack using facts and figures. Resist the temptation. Don't give them the truth. Don't give them something that they might need to understand for their own well-being. Don't give them numbers. Don't give them speculation about the future, because then you're going to lose them. Because then, two reasons. They might just glaze over and get, you know, sort of, you know, math coma. Or they might actually see the truth of this pitch and realize this isn't good for me.
Well, see, this is precisely the way this administration operates. That he is not backing up. He is not surrendering one inch. I'm not even sure if the little trial balloon that Treasury Secretary Snow floated the other day, where he talked about the possibility of not cutting benefits but making the private accounts some kind of supplement to existing benefits, I'm not even sure if that's going to stay on the table for very long. Bush seems bound and determined to point this, and he's, you know, this new tour he's doing, he's talking about 60 stops in 60 days, Mark. He is blitzing. He's got the Republican National Committee, you know, doing these press packages for members of Congress going back to their home communities during the President's Week break to sell his Social Security plan.
Not to mention they got Cheney out there, a bona fide senior citizen. How old is that guy?
500.
Well, he's got, you know, he's been through three hearts, and he's going to be out there speaking, you know, in his version of, like, the earnest, curmudgeonly old guy that's like, look, I'm just going to give you the straight shot here. Now, we also have this horrendous ad that they've been airing. You know, this is, I don't know if you've heard this, but this, you know, the Swift Boat Veterans people have gotten behind in what's the front organization of their retired people? The
USA Next.
USA Next, who's, you know, who's rolled out Art Linkletter. Who that Art Linkletter was even alive? They must have had him in a closet somewhere. It's like, Art, we need you. All right, and they put together an ad to basically discredit the AARP. It's just heinous, folks. Listen to this.
The American Association of Retired Persons is opposing President Bush's plans for Social Security. Why would they do that? If you want to know the truth about old people, talk to the people who know them.
Old people are needy. I need a ride. I need a walker. I need something to eat. Could somebody please help me? I'm in the toilet. I can't get out. It's horrendous.
I had to spend 15 minutes helping my mother find her glasses because she forgot where she put them. Just forgot.
Dude, they crap in their pants.
Enough about World War II. I get it. You were there.
I'm sorry, but if you're going to dinner at 4 o'clock, you really don't need more money.
You liberated Auschwitz. You were there. I understand. Can we watch The Apprentice now?
And when they wear those diapers, they can pee right on themselves, too. Just pee.
Brian! My name is Brian! God!
I remember this one time, my uncle, he was on the floor. I thought he was having a heart attack or he was dead or something. Turns out he wasn't. Just on the floor.
Who the hell is Bobby? Nobody knows Bobby!
Dude, they crapped their pants.
Old people. They oppose President Bush's plans for Social Security. Isn't it time they died already?
paid for by Swift Boat Veterans for whatever cause is being funded by the right-wing millionaires at the moment.
So they're out there trying to sell that, and that adds just a heinous, heinous example of how low they'll go to try and push this thing through. And, you know, now I hear that they're going to try to create, you know, to sort of counter it in another front organization. They're doing a foster grandparents thing where you can actually adopt retired people.
No.
Yes, yes. And they're thinking about creating camps, not unlike internment camps for retired people, where they can just sort of, you know, feed them and do it. It's horrible, the plans that this administration has for the retired people of this country. I'm concerned myself, Riley.
Well, you know,
this is going to affect me, bro. Not you.
Well, no, it's going to affect me, too.
Really?
I'm older than you, remember?
That's what I mean, though. But, you know, people who are 50 or older, they don't get affected by the new...
55 or older.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
man.
Right. I am on the wrong side of the 55-year-old divide, pal.
Yes, you are.
But now, Bush is coming to New Jersey today.
Oh, that's right.
All right?
Get out there in the streets.
All right, now, here's a couple of fast facts about the state of New Jersey, so you understand what Bush's Social Security plan would mean.
Mm-hmm.
Without Social Security in the state of New Jersey, the number of elderly living in poverty would rise from 6% to 45%. That would be an increase of 465,000 people. That's just one state. The average 30-year-old in the state of New Jersey stands to lose $4,524 annually in Social Security benefits under Bush's privatization scheme.
Which brings me to an even more insidious plan of this administration. Drafting the elderly. I don't know if you know this, but you know, get ready to suit up, Grandma, because you're going overseas.
You're going over. By the way, these figures are courtesy of the New Jersey Democratic State Committee. So it's the Democrats that are saying it, but $4,524. That's a 30-year-old. These are the young people that Bush is aiming a lot of his pitch for Social Security privatization at.
What do you have to say about this, folks? 866-303-2270. How are you feeling about your future? If you're a young person who's looking at this in a rational way, are you scared? I'm scared. Are you scared enough to go protest George Bush's efforts to destroy Social Security? Bush will be appearing today at Westfield Armory in Westfield, New Jersey, to pimp Social Security privatization. A protest is scheduled to begin there at 8:30 a.m. today.
Yeah.
Go to njcitizenaction.org for info. Go to MorningSedition.com for info. It starts in an hour and a half, but we'll go for it a couple hours probably. Just get out there and make it undeniable that there's a presence there that is resisting this guy's pitch to steal our money and put it on a roulette table. I don't want my Social Security payments to be dependent on that sound.
Hey.
To you. 866-303-2270. Give us your thoughts. We'll be back to talk about bankruptcy. Michael Tomasky's coming later in the hour to talk about re-engaging the philosophical core of the Democratic Party and getting some cojones going.
You know what else we're going to talk about?
Yeah, and also, I don't want ovaries as well. Yes.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about Jeff Gannon. Does he have any?
No, Mike, don't ask. Can I just make sure that people understand, and some of you do, this is a nuance that Clutch Larson pointed out to me, that gonads cover ovaries as well.
Okay.
Nads is not completely male specific, and we can talk about Jeff Gannon, who I believe does have nads
or something.
Well, it's we have proof, we have pictures.
I forgot.
Let me pull up this picture of his nads. It's 866-303-2270, 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. Head out to New Jersey, Westfield Armory in Westfield, New Jersey. Fight Bush. He's there to pimp Social Security privatization. There's a protest scheduled to begin there at 8:30. If you're in the area, that is New York, Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New Jersey. Come on and fly in. You got an hour. You can fly down from Boston. Go out there. Go to njcitizenaction.org for info or morningsedition.com for info. I went to the therapist yesterday. Thank God, Riley.
Oh, yeah.
I feel better. Here's my dream diary from last night. This is a clean dream palette here. I'm outside a mall in Topeka, Kansas with my dead cat Butch. Butch says, look at it, Mark Maron. Isn't it magnificent? I say, what are we doing here, Butch? Butch says, Howard Dean reached out to Kansas. Now I must reach out as well. The red states are ready to explode. I feel it. We go inside. It's the usual mind-numbing scene. Chain stores, Muzak, fluorescent lighting, bored people in T-shirts looking at stuff they don't need. Butch goes to the railing overlooking the food court. She pulls out a bullhorn and screams, no! All the lights go off and the place is pitch black and people are screaming. 5 seconds later, the lights come back on, but they're neon reds and oranges and purples. Hanging from the ceiling are hundreds of mirrored disco globes. Butch says, people of Kansas, we must come to save your big square state from the crystal fascist neocon death cult zombie brigade. Remove your pants and leave. She cracks a capsule under her nostrils and screams, ah, the lights! The lights! Suddenly the entire building shakes with the reverberations of two enormous speakers which start pumping out deep house music. The disco globes all start spinning at once and hundreds of cats flood out into every corner of the mall. They start humping and yowling and having filthy sex everywhere. In front of the Lady Foot Locker, at the Gap, at the Baby Gap, in the booths at Applebee's. At first the shoppers were appalled, but after a few minutes people started dancing and stripping and snorting poppers, and soon a wriggling mass of people were having an orgy in front of this can't be yogurt. Suddenly a tear gas canister went off and Topeka cops in riot gear tried to clear everyone out. Through the haze I saw Bush slashing a cop screaming, you get the freedom, pig! The lights! The lights! I woke up and my bed was filled with fungus resistant hybrid corn.
You know what? Yeah. I've been to that party.
I know you have, Riley. Back in the day. I read the book, man.
All right. What can I tell you?
It's all right. Hey, Mary in New Jersey. How you doing?
Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to the rally.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
And I want to tell you what my sign says.
What's it say?
It says one word, impeach.
Yeah, thank God. See if it works. Get right up in front of him.
It's shorter than saying that giant whirring sound you hear is FDR spinning in his grave.
That'll be the person next to you.
Hey, yeah. Mary, so you're heading down there now?
We're right there. We're 20 minutes away, so.
Okay, so.
Maybe you
call us back when you get there. Let us know what it looks like.
Okay.
I just don't know how to schedule that, really, because, you know, if it's just a random call. You know what, Jonathan, Clutch Larson, why don't we solicit some calls at around 8:30 and see if anyone's there and look for Mary's call. We'd like to get a little report from you or for somebody to hear how it's going.
Okay, 8:30 might be too early. That's the, like, assemble at 8:30 for a 9 o'clock rally, so.
Maybe a quarter of. Maybe at like 8:45 we'll try, because we leave at 9.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're going. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Mary.
Take care.
Doing that heavy work.
That's excellent, man.
Yeah, it
That's
is.
That's excellent. So here's a call from Nancy in Portland, Maine. Nancy, how are you?
Hi.
Hey, great, guys. How you doing?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm all for the rallies protesting the Social Security, and I'm on that too. But I was thinking in regards to the bankruptcy deal.
Yes.
We need to mobilize the people of this country and stop using our credit cards. What if we did that for a week?
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Whoa!
That would be amazing, and they would stand up and take notice.
Where do you get this stuff they call cash?
Yeah, right.
Well, you know,
the same banks that issue the credit cards, that's where.
No, you're
this
right.
This is a war. You know, we got to get out there and show them that we mean business.
That's a good point, and it's a nice segue for us, Nancy. Let's talk a little bit about bankruptcy legislation. Thanks for your call.
Yeah,
okay,
thanks.
What?
Mark Riley.
Yes.
I'm from Bridgeport, Connecticut, too.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
You never marched in the drum corps from Bridgeport, did you?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
No.
I'm just curious. That used to be the drum corps capital of the universe back in the day.
I know. Yep, I used to go.
Okay.
Take care, Nancy.
Is that all you need, Nancy?
Yep, that's it.
Okay,
that's
good.
It.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, treat Bridgeport right, pal.
No, yeah, but it was just so funny. I was like, wait, I'm from the place you are.
That's right.
That was cute. Thanks for calling. I mean, very profound and moving.
Thank you.
Cute is trivializing in its own way, isn't it? What's wrong with me? What's with the self-censorship of the Marin head this morning?
Uh-oh.
Bankruptcy legislation. The legislation has been pushed for largely written by credit card companies, which rake in $30 billion in profits last year. In short, it will make it harder for people to get protection when they go bankrupt, no matter what the cause of bankruptcy. Republicans and credit card companies say bankruptcy laws are too lenient and allow people to accumulate debts and never pay them off. However, 9 out of 10 bankruptcies occur because of health costs, loss of employment, or divorce, not irresponsible personal behavior and poor financial planning, as the industry maintains. The bankruptcy bill does nothing to address those issues. Dude, Riley, we got an email yesterday that says, you're wrong about bankruptcy. It's all about personal responsibility. The reason people get sick is they don't drink enough water.
Oh, is that it?
Can you believe that? I couldn't believe that email. It's personal responsibility. Unbelievable. So let's talk about these amendments that were shut down by the Republicans and a couple of Democrats. But
yeah,
these were Democratic amendments. Oh, we got to go, don't we?
We got to go in a minute. But there was, you know, one of those amendments would have limited the rates at 30%. You know, loan sharks can't get away with charging 30%
anymore. We got to come this way. We got to talk to Michael Tomasky in a minute.
My man.
All
We're going to talk to him. We're going to talk about the Democrats and fighting when we come back here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
The show is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
The Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Denton, Texas. Your grace...
Raise your soiled idols, stroking hands up to heaven, thy fallen virgins of Harnakahak. Heed the warnings of thy holy prophet Balak, son of Esarhaddon, fourth cousin removed to Assurbanipal, and good close friend of Phenobarbital.
Wait a minute.
I got some serious bonus end time indications coming right at you, heathens. And this time the rapture's here for sure. Not like all those other times I said it was coming. Those were just tests. As you may have recall, last hebdomino, I told you about a small town in Nebraska where 2,000 tons of manure burned for almost 4 months. The week before that, I told you about a blind man in Scotland who bit his guide dog. And the week before that, I told you about a small town in Nebraska where 2,000 tons of manure burned for almost 3 months and 2 weeks. Do the math, people. The end is nigh, naysayers. The end is nigh, naysayers. And soon Jesus will show his love and mercy by killing everything he can get his little meat hooks on. For according to the Associated Press, this week a Ford belonging to a man in Bismarck, North Dakota, was stolen 3 times in 6 days. Associated Press people, right here in black and white, sign of the devil, 3 times, 6, 6, 6, 6.
Wait a minute, Cardinal. What about the sudden rash of earthquakes and floods around the world and the recent poll saying 1/4 of all Americans would favor using nuclear weapons against terrorists? What about that stuff?
Oh, okay, you got me there.
Look, never mind, Cardinal. How about this? Didn't you ask listeners to email you if they had rapture-related inquiries? How's that working out?
Well, it's working out great, heathen. God has shined his radiance upon me with a multitude of respondents.
Uh-huh.
First, I got 2 test emails from myself. Then I received notice that I won the Canadian lottery. Then the Spanish lottery. In fact, I won the Spanish lottery twice. Now all I have to do is give them my credit card and social security numbers and what time of night I leave the apartment.
Wait, were there any questions about the rapture?
Well, it's about time you asked, Mark. This email is from sinner Stephen Doyle, and it reads... Dear Morning Sedition, I love the Rapture Watch feature. However, please tell the Cardinal that there's no such word as prophesized. What he really wants is prophesied. How's this for an answer, Doyle? May you be 1,000 fiery deeps in the 7th level of heel, you schmuck. The hurt doesn't end there, Mark. I also got this follow-up mail from Stephen Doyle. Dear Morning Sedition, I love the Rapture Watch feature. However... Please tell the Cardinal that when speaking in tongues last week, he used the past pluperfect subjunctive form of the verb tasana in the phrase montasa shinpas amon tapita. What he really wants is the present perfect indicative. Montasa shinpas amontapi too. Well, I'll give you that one, Doyle. But remember, you can wrong me all you want, Toad Licker. But your criticism only makes me stronger. I don't need your approval, for it was prophesized in Revelation 2.5 men. And I quote it, "And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in him shall all families of the earth be cursed. So, if A curseth B, and B contains C, then A curseth C. Transitive theorem of cursing. Now, if you don't mind, Mark, I have to give my savings account number to a man in Nigeria. In the meantime, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you in hell."
So that guy in Nigeria is in trouble, huh?
Yeah, you see, yeah, he needs a lot of help.
Wow.
But, you know, I figure I can make something off of it.
Yeah.
We all prosper.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you should give him all your credit information and everything else. I think that's great. Can I have it as well?
I think you're being facetious now, sinner.
No, no, I'm not.
You're just so upset about that incident down at the Spahn Ranch years ago.
Yeah, well, you know, I saw you there as well.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right, buddy.
Look, it's a simple mistake to make when somebody tells you he's Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked like him, he acted like him. He said, you know, everybody could have made that mistake.
All right, all right. But, you know, the girls were cute.
Oh, yeah. Those are my sinning days.
Yeah.
I'm well, much better now.
Well, you take care of yourself.
All right.
Oh, man. See you later.
Whoa.
Everyone's leaving the room now, Riley. I mean, there's some extra laughs in there. You know, the Cardinal brings people into the room, for God's sakes. If you want to email the Cardinal, you can email him at crisismad@airamericaradio.com. On the phone, I'm very excited to talk to the executive editor of the American Prospect. He's written a couple of articles in the American Prospect, one, The Philosophy Gap, another argument between the left and center. Democrats have to dig deeper than that. And also the newest piece, Give Me an F. Democrats need to do some rethinking. Sure, but they need to fight, too. Good morning, Michael Tomasky. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you all?
All right. Good. How you doing, Michael?
Okay.
Pretty excited to talk to you.
Yeah.
What can you say, Riley?
No, you okay in D.C., man? I know you're a New Yorker, Michael.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it ain't New York.
Hey, Michael, quickly, now, to begin this conversation, I agree with you. I think we do need to fight. I think we do need to come together. I think some Democrats in the House need to get some nads. But I also want to ask you, what are exactly the Democratic core values? What are we fighting for, Michael?
Well, the main thing is that, and this is where one of the Democrats' big problems is, the main thing to me is that we believe government can play an active role in people's lives, and can do good things for people. And so security is a good example of that. That's one that the majority of Americans still happen to share with us, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, there are other values about equality and justice and America's role in the world and so forth, but the core one that separates liberals from conservatives is that we believe the government exists to balance out the inequalities of pure capitalism and can do good things for people. Now, the problem is that Democratic politicians don't have the guts to stand up there and say that, because it's been 25 years of government's evil, government's your enemy, and they don't have the guts to stand up and say government does good things and has done good things. I bet you that most American people don't even know that the Democrats were largely responsible for Social Security, or that the Democrats were largely responsible for Medicare or the GI Bill or a lot of the good things that people still believe are good things.
Michael, people don't know what happened last week.
Yeah, right, exactly. And nobody talks about it. I mean, I think, you know, the Democrats should start by trying to defend the positive role of government. Now, they're very fair. They'll say, oh, we can't do that. The government's too discredited. Well, you know, it's got to be recredited, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one group of people who can really do that, and that's Democratic politicians.
Now, Michael, Senator John Kerry, Frank Lautenberg, Chuck Schumer, Hillary Clinton, Harry Reid, Dick Durbin, Byron Dorgan, they're all coming here to New York today to have a forum on Social Security, which, of course, they're fighting Bush's privatization scheme, and it's the first leg of a four-city swing. Is this the kind of fighting that you're talking about when in your article, Give Me an F?
They've been pretty good on Social Security. I'm not sure why they're coming to New York City, where, you know, 80% of the population agrees with their position. I think maybe they ought to try Kansas City. But, you know, but it's a good idea, sure. It's a good idea to get out there on the road and do some things.
What about John Conyers and Gannon resolution? Is that a good action? Doesn't that need to be followed up? How come there aren't more people jumping on board with that?
Yeah, sure. That absolutely does need to be followed up.
Can you explain to us what it is exactly?
Well, you know, as you guys know, what, the resolution?
Yeah.
No, I can't. Maybe.
Then I better. We will. Apparently, he's trying to get together some people to investigate this guy efficiently and get out all the records that led to him being okayed to do what he did.
Right. Okay, I guess I could have said that much.
Wow. It's nice talking to you, Michael. I'm setting up more. I'm trying to get more of you. Go ahead.
The idea is that, you know, as we all know, I'm sure you guys have told your listeners that, you know, if this had happened, you know, with John Kerry in the White House and they'd credentialed a guy like this, we'd be hearing nothing about it. You know, we'd be hearing everything about it. You know, nothing but Gannon from Fox and all these other people.
Right.
And the Democrats don't have, you know, they don't have either the ability or the gumption or the media, you know, propaganda network behind them to be able to do something like that. But but things like this shouldn't be left just to John Conyers or Louise Slaughter. You know, the Democrats should be making a bigger deal about this. I'll never forget in the spring of 2002, when there was a flyer that went around from a right-wing group that had pictures of Daschle and John Walker Lind.
Right.
Compared Daschle Lind, you guys remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
And, you know, the only Democrat to say anything about it was Harry Reid. Now, they should have had, you know, every Democratic senator up there.
Now, okay, so what do you do? Why is this lack of gumption? I mean, that seems to be the crux of it. I mean, media arms and everything else and propaganda in terms of fighting propaganda, you know, our own propaganda. Why the lack of gumption? What are they afraid of?
They're afraid of the counterattack. They're afraid of being counterattacked, and they're afraid of, you know, some of them are, I guess, they consider themselves to be in vulnerable positions, especially senators. Most House members are in safe districts, but there are a lot of Democratic senators in red states.
So their political well-being is more important than the desires of their constituents.
Well, that's one way to put it, sure.
Okay, we're going to talk about Hillary Clinton when we come back. Would that be all right, Michael?
I'd be delighted.
Okay, right. 45 past the hour, we're talking to Michael Tomasky. We'll continue talking to him after the break. He is the editor over at the American Prospect. It's 45 past the hour. I already say that? All right, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Back at 49 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're on the phone with Michael Tomasky, the executive editor of the American Prospect. Hey, Michael, now you got me all insecure before. I just want to tell you what exactly happened. The House Committee on Rules, Judiciary, Government Reform, Homeland Security, and Ways and Means submitted a resolution of inquiry which would require the Justice Department and Department of Homeland Security to turn over all documentation regarding the Guckert Gannon man access to the White House day after day for 2 years. I just wanted to clear that up because you made me feel stupid for a moment.
No, I didn't know all that.
Oh, good. Hey. Yay. All right.
And it was interesting to hear Merlin Olsen's voice during the break.
So let's talk about this article that you wrote, The Philosophy Gap. Essentially, what is the philosophy gap? Is it because we are constantly putting ourselves in a reactionary position and not really addressing our philosophy?
Yes. You summed it up really well. I think the problem is basically that, and some people won't like to hear this, but I do think it's true, that conservatives talk more about what they really believe. Now, we think what they believe is crazy, but they talk more about what they really believe. And liberals tend to talk more about strategy, how we should position ourselves on social issues, how we should position ourselves on national security, rather than starting the conversation at the place where it should start, which is the beginning, which is, okay, what do we believe?
Well, isn't it easier to talk about that when you're narrow? It seems like conservatives are so narrow, and liberal is such a broad base of almost sort of boutique issues.
Yeah, it is. It's a bigger challenge on the liberal Democratic side because it covers a much wider spectrum, you know, from Maxine Waters to Joe Lieberman, and because liberalism isn't quite isn't quite built that way. You know,
right.
A guy on my staff, Matt Iglesias, wrote a really good column after mine, and he said that, you know, conservatives believe in certain things like, say, lower taxes. Well, liberals don't believe in high taxes just for the sake of high taxes. We believe in enough taxes to do the things that government should do. And then the question is defining enough, which people have different opinions about. You know?
Michael, we see, during the course of an average week's worth of news cycles, you see occasionally Republicans, like Bill Frist, for example, the other day, getting off the ranch a little bit in terms of, for example, Bush's Social Security plan. But you see them ponging right back on the ranch very quickly. Within 24 hours, Frist is backtracking from what he was talking about, perhaps having to modify the plan or not dealing with it inside this year's legislative session. How come Democrats don't seem to be able to exercise that same kind of discipline?
Who's there to enforce the discipline?
Harry Reid. I know. I'm just being funny.
Well, I mean, I think Reid is going to prove to be a better Senate leader than Daschle. I don't think Daschle really did it at all, and I think that Pelosi did it more, has been doing it more than Gephardt did. But you know, the fact is that same mentality just doesn't really exist on the Democratic side. And you know, maybe if there were a White House, you know, if there were a Democratic White House, you know, the John Kerry equivalent of Karl Rove could call people up and say, get back on the reservation, blah, blah, blah. But it just doesn't work that same kind of way on the liberal Democratic side. And it's, you know, that's good in some ways that it doesn't, because people get to speak their mind more and be a little bit more free about what they believe. But in some ways it's bad. And yeah, Frist, I mean, well, it follows a pattern of, you know, of the past 4 years, but Frist was I'm sure talked to pretty sternly.
Yeah, I'm sure. Michael, let's talk a minute about Hillary Clinton, who seems to be attempting to position herself more toward the center of the Democratic Party. Starting in January, she was meeting with the Reverend Eugene Rivers up in Boston, guy who does a lot of great youth work, but who is vehemently opposed to same-sex marriage. She's also talking about possibly trying to bridge the gap with people who are anti-choice. She's making a lot of the moves in that direction, but at the same time, organizations like the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, seem to be losing steam. I mean, there was a piece just the other day in The Nation that says the DLC sputters to a halt. If Hillary Clinton is heading toward the center, who's still left in the center?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, but I guess I would say that the DLC shouldn't be confused with the American voting public, right? I mean, they're two different things. So if you take the three broad issue areas that we deal with, you know, foreign policy and national security, economic issues, and social issues. I think she's definitely moving to the center on number one and number three, probably staying pretty traditionally liberal on number two, economic issues. I mean, she certainly hasn't, you know, done any backsliding on Social Security or anything like that. You know, there's going to be an argument between now and 2008 as to where Democrats need to be, particularly on national security and social issues. She's obviously staking out some turf that's pretty clear.
Can I ask you a question, though? Because when I, you know, I'm not generally that excited about Hillary Clinton, but when I read about the way she approached the reproductive freedom issue in terms of, you know, calling upon the extreme religious right to meet her halfway in educating to, you know, that would, and hence that through education, abortion would be minimized if more people were educated. And all they could really respond to that was, you know, she's full of it. She's lying. If she really wants to talk, why don't we talk about abstinence only? Isn't there a possibility that she's triangulating and really making them look as narrow and stupid and uncaring as they are?
Yeah, I mean, I think politically it was a smart speech that she gave.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, morally it was intelligent too, and defensible, because now a position is emerging on behalf of abortion advocates, of which I'm certainly one, that says, you know, yes, we support the right, but we don't support, you know, the willy-nilly activity of people getting abortions left, right, and center. What we want is fewer abortions. And you know, that's our goal, and that's boxing the pro-life extremists into a corner for sure. And you could see that, like, who wrote in this week's, I think it was Time magazine, a column applauding this.
I can't do all your fact checking, Michael.
No, I happen to know the answer.
Okay.
Ah!
Andrew Sullivan.
Okay, good, okay.
Which proves the point that, you know, some on the right are responding to this and that the extremists are being backed into a corner.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you think that it's a winning strategy for her?
I think it's a winning strategy for her, and I think it's a winning strategy for the pro-choice movement that has, whose rhetoric in the past few years has grown a little stale. You know, Bill Clinton introduced the language safe, legal, and rare. The pro-choice groups didn't really like that language very much. They didn't like they liked the first two words. They didn't like the third word very much. But that language, that kind of rhetoric, I think reaches out to people who basically think that women should have abortion rights but have some moral qualms about the practice.
Thanks for talking to us, Michael Tomasky.
Have a good weekend.
Great
Thanks,
talking
Michael.
To you.
Take care.
He's the editor of the American Prospect. Very informative. That was great.
No, it was great. You know, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Hillary and this triangulation thing.
I do, too.
And the pitfalls and the rewards. When we come back here on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. We're in the middle of it. Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, and people all over the country and world. Excuse me, I have to address some friends across the river who I can see from here. The protest against George Bush's efforts to destroy Social Security. He's appearing at the Westfield Armory in Westfield, New Jersey, to pimp his Social Security privatization. A protest is scheduled for a half hour. The thing's supposed to start at 9, and we've got some new information here. You can go to njcitizenaction.org for info, but here's what we just found out, is that the new meeting, the new NJCA rally meeting location, will be at the corner of Clark Street and North Avenue across from the Lord & Taylor store at 8:30. Apparently, we just got a call from someone on the ground there that the police are redirecting people, as they do with these things. If you have to protest, can you do it from a mile away? Can you do it in a pen? Can you do it from another state? Could you call it in? Don't let this stifle you. Go out there, make your presence known. If no other media outlets pay attention to you, someone here will pay attention to you, okay? You know, we want this to happen, and we want you to get attention, and we want you to be safe, and we want you to know where you're going. The corner of Clark Street and North Avenue, across from the Lord & Taylor store at 8:30 a.m. So now back to America. Hello, everybody.
How are you?
There's Mark Riley. We've been talking a lot about what Democrats need to do. We just got off the phone with Michael Tomasky. Had a very engaging conversation that ended on talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton. And I got to be honest with you, Riley. Rarely do I get. I don't even know how to use a sexual metaphor here, but when Howard Dean, his first speech. As the Democratic National Committee chairman, when he started talking about, you know, blaming the Republicans for being, you know, fiscally irresponsible and not trustable with America's money, I got a little surge of energy. I got excited. I said, yeah, that's the kind of stuff I want to hear. I want to hear a new angle. You know, I want to hear them, you know, taking them on. And then I'm reading this stuff about Hillary Clinton and sort of like in her unique sort of triangulating manner. Which, you know, this was at a New York State family planning provider speech that she gave. This is good stuff, okay? I'm just going to quote right from the speech because I think this paragraph is the crux. Research shows that the primary reason, I'm quoting Hillary Clinton, that teenage girls abstain is because of their religious beliefs, religious and moral values. Sorry. We should embrace this and support programs that reinforce the idea that abstinence at a young age is not just a smart thing to do, it is the right thing to do. But we should also recognize, this is important, what works and what doesn't work. And be fair, the jury is still out on the effectiveness of abstinence-only programs. Well, not really. They don't work. Yeah. But to continue the quote, I don't think this debate should be about ideology. It should be about facts and evidence. We have to deal with the choices young people make, not just the choice we wish they would make. We should use all the resources at our disposal to ensure that teens are getting the information they need to make the right choice. And then further down, she says, teenagers who have strong emotional attachments to their parents are much less likely to become sexually active at an early age. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But she's talking, you know, in an interesting way from a secular point of view here. Non-secular point of view. She's not being religious. You know, she is saying, look, you people are being impractical. You know, abstinence only is ridiculous. All right, the best thing that could really work here is that if parents are open and that they have the proper education, and later in the speech she talks about the proper contraception, the availability of same day, you know, of day of birth control, RU 46, the pills that should be readily available if people need them. Let's be, you know, reasonable, rational, base our ideas on facts and practicality, and stop this religious nonsense. And the only real response that the religious right could muster up was like, she doesn't mean it. If she meant business, she'd be talking about abstinence only. And she makes them look like marginalized dummies. They are a cultural malignancy that has no care for human beings. They don't reach out in any real way. All they want is control. The only souls they think they can save are the unborn souls, which is, you know, really just ridiculous. And I just think that she's calling them out, Riley. And I was excited because what I saw was not someone moving to the middle. I saw somebody saying, you know, if you're a Republican, this is not a move to the middle. If you're a practical human being, you will realize that the plan that the Christian right has around abstinence and around proselytizing and around making this a moral issue is regressive, it's archaic, and it's culturally retarded.
See, this is one of the things, Mark, that Hillary Clinton is speaking out about, that folks are looking at her and saying, well, gee, you know, she's moving in a different direction. I think you're right. I do think she's triangulating. But there was the speech, actually it wasn't even really a speech. It was the fact that she went to a fundraiser back in January for the National 10-Point Leadership Foundation. This is the organization headed by the Reverend Eugene Rivers, who is the spiritual leader of the Pentecostal Azusa Christian Community up in Boston. He, on the other hand, now, see, this doesn't deal directly with the issue that he was talking that she was talking about earlier, which is, of course, family planning. This is an issue about same-sex marriage. And Eugene Rivers, now again, he does some really great work with young people in Boston, which was probably why she was there. But then he says stuff like this, and this is scary. Quote, frequently same-sex couples wanting to marry are white lesbians who seek the accoutrement of family life and the proverbial white picket fence. From their positions of socioeconomic privilege, they insist that their desires must be viewed as rights instead of preferences, unquote.
Okay, so that guy's got some extreme views, and he's wrong, all right?
He is absolutely wrong.
And I understand that. What I don't understand, you know, is like in the same speech that I was quoting from, you know, Hillary can really get some stuff off sometimes. You know, if she says, quoting her, according to the Alan Guttmacher Institute, there are 15,000 abortions a year from rape. How is it possible that women who have been so victimized by violence can be victimized again by ideology? And how can we expect to reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies if we lose this most obvious opportunity to help women who may have had an unwanted pregnancy physically forced upon them? You know, the way she's reaching out to women, what I don't understand is why would the left, why would the Democrats, you know, start to, you know, judging Hillary on in terms of like, hey, we're not going to back you because you're moving to the center on two issues. You know, if you liked her before and you believe that, you know, her heart was in the right place before, why does she have to face confrontation from Democrats and liberals if she's really the only practical front runner that we can see right now? You know, and Dan Pashman, Son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, insists that it's impossible for her to win. And I'm born again, you know, sort of, into Hillary.
Like, you're born again Hillary.
Well, I was not, you know, I was sort of skeptical, and my reasons were wrong. I just didn't, I was thinking like Dan. I'm like, you know, there's so many reasons people don't like her. She's a woman. You know, there's a million reasons why she'll never be president. But I think she exhibited a tremendous amount of ideological courage here.
Well, guys, I mean...
Hi, Dan.
Hey, how are you? Dan.
I just magically appeared here.
No, you came in the door. I saw you.
Oh, right.
Okay. Go ahead. What?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that ideologically speaking, that the triangulation approach, what Hillary's trying to do, makes a lot of sense, and it could be very effective. I just have serious doubts about Hillary pulling it off. I don't see her as the person that can triangulate anything, because there's such a huge percentage of people, 40-something percent, that hate her guts. And doesn't matter how smart what she says is, that speech that you just read from is very intelligent. It makes a lot of sense. But
that's
so
true
many people
of Bush, too, right?
It is, but Bush doesn't try to reach across the people who hate him. He gives the middle finger to those people.
Yeah, but what makes you think that these people won't soften a little bit once their lives become more compromised by Republican policy? I mean, what makes you think that?
I mean, It could with the right person, but they are so against Hillary, right or wrong. Nothing coming out of her mouth will make any sense to these people.
And Riley, the black community, by and large, is pro-Hillary.
Quite pro-Hillary.
Now, you know, this idea about gay marriage, I mean, is that an insulated idea within the black clergy that they're trying to push on the community? Isn't there more tolerance in the broad-based black community for homosexual marriage and for homosexuals in the community than is being exhibited by the clergy?
Well, in this case, Hillary Clinton is getting hit with a sort of guilt by association thing. The fact is that the black community is deeply split about the issue of homosexuality in general. Gay marriage, you may even find some surveys that will say most black people don't support gay marriage.
Yeah, but surveys just, you know, I think that surveys and the whole idea of thinking like that is a shortcoming of the American public right now. Very few people have opinions until some idiot goes, "What do you think?" And they're like, "Oh, no." You know what I mean? And so I don't. Well, anyways, let's get some calls on 866-303-2270. Tell me what you think as a liberal, as a Democrat, of Hillary Clinton and what she needs to do and what she is doing. How would that be for a call segment?
There you go.
Which side of it are you on? All right, the Pashman side or the Marin side?
Or the right side.
Or the Riley side or your own side? Let's hear your voice. 866-303-2270.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm good.
Hey, 20 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Morning Sedition program. It is Friday. We are taking calls about Hillary Clinton, 866-303-2270. Look, if you're going to call up and just say she sucks, tell us who you think is better and whether they have a chance. Really, I want to do that. And I also want to tell the people that are on their way to protest George Bush at the Westfield Armory in Westfield, New Jersey, that you got to go to the corner of Clark Street and North Avenue. Police are pushing people over there. They'd rather you not be seen by the president if you're going to protest them.
That's right.
It's across from the Lord and Taylor store, and that's at 8:30 a.m. Right now, as we're logging calls, here's the iNews 5000 machine I bought to translate some headlines. And let's do this. Brendan intro. All right, from the Newark Star Ledger, Bush calls Bin Laden top threat. Put that in the machine. Bush calls Bin Laden top threat. Translation: Bush says one day America could even be targeted for terrorists. Could even be targeted by terrorists. I'm stupid. Hey, this will help. From ABC News, Martha Stewart returns home from prison. Martha Stewart returns home from prison. Translation, ex-con struggles with fame, extreme wealth. It's going to be rough. Here we go from the Associated Press. Cat survives 10-mile trip atop car. Cat survives 10-mile trip atop car. Translation, Marin apologizes to Cat, promises to do ASPCA benefits.
I knew he was going to be in that one somewhere.
All right, man. Rachel in Dallas, good morning. What's on your mind?
Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Hi. What do you got to say about Hillary?
Well, I called to say that I think no matter how good of a leader she could be, I think she's just too polarizing. I'm down here in the Bible Belt where there's no way she could win anybody over.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't Bush polarizing? I mean, isn't the country polarized? I mean, you don't think she has any chance at all?
Well, keep in mind the bubble that I'm in. Yeah, Bush is polarizing too, and I'm in the heart of where they're for him. But, I mean, from my perspective, I think she probably could do a great job. Bill Clinton was a good leader, but...
no hope. You do agree with Pashman. Thanks a lot for your call.
Sorry.
It's okay. No, you don't have to apologize.
Mark, you know...
No, Pashman has to apologize.
Every time someone accuses Hillary of being too polarizing, her response is, well, President Bush is very polarizing too, and that's true. But the difference is that President Bush goes to his base for votes. Hillary is trying to go and reach across to the people who hate her. to get votes. And that's a fundamental difference in approach that we need to understand.
But you're assuming that people can't change, that people can't, you know, if she does something noble or she is, you know, becomes a very effective spokesperson, which she already is, if she becomes a charismatic leader in the eyes of those people, which she could become, you're assuming that, you know, whatever policies that are engaged now by this administration aren't going to completely, you know, drain this country of everything, and that, you know, she might offer some real hope at another, you know, just 2 years from now, she could win some people over.
If that happens, I'll be the first one cheering. You know, I'd love to see that, but I don't see it happening. I don't think she's a good enough politician.
First of all, I think she is a good enough politician. But secondly, I do think that there are some people who are going to break with conservatives who are saying, oh, she's just trying to reach out, she's just trying to pander, blah, blah, blah. I think there are conservatives who will listen to what she's saying and take it for what it's worth and maybe won't have that same negative opinion.
I think we might have one on the phone. Leslie, listening in Fort Lauderdale. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie.
Good morning.
What was your reaction to the speech of Hillary's?
Well, as I told you, call screener or whoever answers the phone, I'm a conservative and I'll proudly admit it, but I was impressed with Hillary's speech, and I have some respect for somebody now that I didn't have a lot of respect for before I heard the speech.
Ha! Passman, thank you very much, Leslie.
Yeah, now what? What?
All right, anyways.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Touche. But see, that's it. And you also, you are, I think, and whatever those poll numbers might represent, are miss something. You're denying the ability for her to connect with women, all right? Now, there are a lot of women who vote conservatively just because they're bullied by their retarded husbands, okay? Now, there are a lot of women out there that would more than happily secretly go into that voting booth and vote for Hillary Clinton because she stands up. She represents.
There are a lot of men who would do the opposite for the same reason.
Yeah, but remember, there are more women voters than men. And all you need is 50% plus one.
Yeah! All right. We're taking a call from Stephen in Connecticut. How are you, Stephen?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right,
Stephen.
Man.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I think it has nothing. Hillary just doesn't have a chance, you know, anywhere to win the presidency. I mean, yeah, I like her speech. It's great, but there's too much of a stigma attached because now she has to defeat that handicap that she has and then start winning people over.
Well, wait, what's her handicap?
Yeah, what is the handicap, Stephen?
Well, she's polarizing. You know, people just don't like her.
Why?
I mean, that's the handicap that people have to overcome.
But people, like everyone I talk to from our side, is like, you know, they love Bill Clinton. A lot of people love Bill Clinton.
I'm not talking about our side. I'm talking about the other side.
Yeah, right. But we just talked to somebody from the other side who said, look, I was impressed by what she said.
Yes, but we approach it as if the Republicans aren't going to attack her. We know they're going to attack her. So as soon as they come up with an idea, oh, yeah, I like her, then they're going to send the pit bulls after her.
Isn't it amazing how much we overthink things and then just give up?
It's not giving up. It's looking at it realistically.
Okay, who's better, Stephen? Tell me who's better.
Right now, I like Joe Biden.
I agree with you. I think Biden's great. I think I said that to our producer this morning. Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden would be awesome. If Joe Biden can do it on his own, I'm all for it. I hope that he has those aspirations because I think that guy's sharp.
He will never run for president again.
Record that, Larson, because I just wanted to have that on tape.
Thank you. Take that.
What, Stephen?
How about Wilder from Virginia?
Warner. I was just about to say, Wilder was governor a long time.
We're going to have to do some research.
No, either. Mark Warner is actually, Mark Warner has a website where they're promoting his candidacy in 2008.
Well, I have to refresh. I have to take the guy in. I have to look at him and listen to him a little bit. Thank you for your call,
Yes, thanks for the call. One problem with Warner is that he's term limited out soon, and that means he will be out of government by the time he runs. That's always a handicap.
Okay, well, coming up, we got a lot of things. Are we going to do some more calls? We got Dog of the Week.
Let's
take a couple more calls, too, after the break. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio. We're taking calls about Hillary Clinton, 866-303-2270. Ted in Nebraska, how are you?
Good morning, Mark and Mark. Hillary Clinton is the worst thing that ever happened to this country. Radical feminist agenda is taking us right down the tube.
Help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no. It's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. It's 10 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, Democratic ideals for Republican shareholders. Hey, did you see the Oscars? All those liberals parading around like they're better than everybody else. Oh, I'm rich and stupid. Who are you wearing? I'm wearing a gay man dress and gay man earrings with hair by Homo. Here's my idea of a red carpet. That's for you, Johnny Depp. Shave that pubic hair off your lip, Dobie Gillis. And Chris Rock, you're supposed to be funny. You bombed, loser. $10 million baby is best picture. I saw 10 minutes of that bleeding heart piece of crap and wanted to put out. But what? It put me to sleep, man. What? Hey, how about that see-through dress on Hillary Skank, huh? Get it? Hillary Skank? What's the matter? Best actress? Can't afford a bra? So you won an Oscar for playing a boxer, huh, Skank? Bring it on! What's the matter, liberal? Can't take a punch? Anybody named Hillary is a loser. Anybody. And that. Geez, you punch like Barbara Boxer. Oh, sorry about the low blow. Back to the trailer court for you, Hillbilly Skank. Get it? Hillbilly Skank? You've been short. Yes, it's 12 past the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Limousine liberals, gun control, tree hunters.
Right, you are. That's right, caller. They should be allowed to put up the Ten Commandments. The only commandment marked the shark can't obey. Thou shalt not kill. Sorry, God, I'm not perfect. Just forgiven. Hey, it's 13 after the hour. Time for the Neocon Power Weather Forecast. Forecast calls for clouds gathering around Social Security. You're going to need shelter. The shelter of personal retirement accounts. Listen to the President, Patriots. Ted Kennedy's got his hand in your pockets. Stick around, Neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Oh, man.
Are you okay?
What happened, man? I feel,
you all right?
Well, I was just sitting on the ground. How come no one helped me? Oh, man.
I reached out my hand, but you wouldn't.
I hate when I black out like that. Sophia in Long Island. What's going on, Sophia?
Hi, Sophia.
Good morning, guys. I just want to say I love your show.
Thank you.
You taught me so much.
Oh, thanks.
Unfortunately, I personally love Hillary. I love her. I think she is extremely brilliant as a politician, and I admire her personal criticism.
Yeah?
But the basic problem is that regardless of whether she's polarizing or not, she's packing ovaries. And middle America is not ready for a female in any position of power because we're still working against the old boy network.
What about Condoleezza Rice? What about, I mean, you know, there's definitely people in big positions of power on the other side. I understand.
Condoleezza Rice, personally, not for nothing. I can't say that on radio.
Well, thanks for your call. You bring up a good point, and I think the one point we're seeing is that Democrats and liberals will definitely sort of counter-check themselves. I mean, if Hillary Clinton really manifests herself as, you know, a potential candidate with the charisma and the momentum and the focus to do this, are we going to get behind her ultimately? Or are we going to sit there and try and second guess this middle America idea? Remember, they're just people, and most of them, you know, most all of us on some level are marks. We're easily sold. We can change our minds. You know, we don't hold on to things depending on what the context is and how our lives are going at any particular point in time. Am I right?
You know what's the danger here, Mark?
What?
That people will say, I love her, but, and then end up, if she wins the nomination, not voting because they don't think she has a chance to win. There's got to be a point at which, I remember 1991, when Bill Clinton first started talking about running for president, nobody knew who the hell he was, never mind whether they thought he could win. Bill Clinton wasn't the front-running candidate in 1992, not at the beginning, but eventually
People got to know who he was. He survived a number of scandals along the way. He ended up being a relatively polarizing figure, but he was running against George H.W. Bush, who had ruined the American economy, and he ended up winning. Right now, I mean, we don't know where America is going to be in 2007, early 2008.
I can tell you where it's going to be. In the crapper. Now, you know, and I think that ultimately politicians, you know, if they can rise to the occasion, they can change people's minds. That's their job to do that. I think that by liberals and Democrats, you know, from our side, our people, if by stigmatizing her just because out of fear that she might not accommodate other people, it's just, it's confusing, weird, sort of self-censoring, guilty. It's the worst of what we are. Joe in New Hampshire, how are you, Joe?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Thank goodness we can get you guys here.
Oh, good.
I'll try to keep it brief. The problem with Hillary is that people like my conservative Republican sister say they would rather vote for anybody else, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's the exact opposite that happened with Bush in 2000.
Right.
Look at the other Republicans who are running against him. They were all much better qualified. I mean, who wouldn't be? And we got our Alfred E. Newman lookalike as president.
Yeah.
And all the conservative media said, oh, well, he's got the most money. He's the front runner. He's going to get elected. And
yeah.
Bam, he's president.
No, I agree with you. I think that we should, you know, like, you know, we should, you know, not help them by sitting there going, no, I don't know if they're going to like her.
People said that about Kerry, and I went out door to door in the campaign, and I said, you know, forget that. Who's better, Kerry or Bush? I mean, that's a no-brainer. But
you know what? Hillary's no John Kerry. I got to tell you, Hillary on a charismatic level, and just the fact that her Senate record is not going to be as lengthy and as easy to pick apart. I mean, there's a lot of things. She's much different, just on, you know, on all levels than John Kerry.
I agree with you on that. But whoever we have running has got to come out swinging and just simply tell the truth. And tell it often and tell it loud.
But, yeah, but also we can't be standing on the sidelines going, oh, she's not wearing the right trunks for this fight.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for your call.
No problem.
All right, Drew in New York. What's up, Drew?
Hi, Drew.
How you doing?
Good. All right.
Love you guys.
Thank you.
I'd like to explain real quick why Hillary can't win and make one quick comment afterwards if I could.
Okay, do it.
You got to remember that, you know, when the moral majority came out in the 70s, what was one of their first things that they wanted to kill? The Equal Rights Amendment.
Right, right.
The right is going to get men out to vote against Hillary because she's a woman. And women. The same women who believe that their place is in the home. And I love your idealism that says, you know, people can change and people can see this. But as we saw with the last election, they have a foothold in these people's minds. They have the mind washing has gone so far that they control them. And it's not going to change with Hillary. And although I would love her.
I don't know. You know, I understand that you're saying that they have a hold on their minds. They've got the neocon death cult zombie hold on their brains. But there is some, you know, schisms within that ultra right community right now around economic policy. And I think that, you know, maybe I'm an idealist, but I think that people can change. But I understand what you're saying, and perhaps you are correct, but I don't want to let go of it right now.
Quick comment?
Yeah. Sure.
A great vice presidential candidate, I think, 2008, and people have really forgotten since 2002.
Yeah.
Max Cleland.
Yes, I think he's going to be on our show next
week.
Yeah,
he is doing the
really? Yeah, yeah. Thank you for your call, Drew. We'll ask him about that when he's here. How are you, Ricky, in Fayetteville, sorry.
Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Wow.
Arkansas,
sorry.
Yeah.
One of those.
One
I'm
of
glad
those.
You're in Arkansas. What's going on?
I think what we're hearing are examples of Democrats that need to grow some nads.
Yes.
I mean, the 47% that Paxton wants to get all cuddly with are the ones that are going to hate anyone we put up. They're going to attack any Democrat we put out there anyway.
Yeah.
And I like Hillary Clinton. What's wrong with her? I mean, are they so scared of a strong woman that they can't have her on there? I mean,
that's right. I'm not scared of a strong woman. I'd rather myself.
Actually, you're married to one, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Me too.
Thank you, Ricky. Appreciate the calls. Wow. People get very excited about this on both sides. You know, I don't know what it is about me, Riley, but I'll tell you, you know, in the last couple of weeks between, you know, Howard Dean's speech and Hillary Clinton's speech, I'm excited again, man. I think that, you know, between the two of them, we're going to, you know, push some of these, you know, these spineless Democrats, you know, and I'm saying that as a Democrat from this side to, you know, to really start speaking up, making a stand, doing something, you know, as opposed to cowering. Unless I don't know if Karl Rove calls these people up and says, look, you know, if you say anything, we're taking you out. You know, I don't know if that actually happens. Let's take one more call. Who do we got? Easter in Houston.
Hey.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Right. How are you?
Hi. I was just calling to really say that, you know, I'm not supporting Hillary right now. You know, if she won the general election, I'd support her, but I'm not supporting her right now for the primaries if she does run in the primaries, because I really think she goes too far to the right and to try and please the people on the right.
So what has she done that makes you think that?
She really stood up for the war in Iraq. She's really on, at times, I feel she's been lockstep with the Bush administration on the war in Iraq, just pushing their message. And there's other issues, too. Israel really being a real big supporter of Israel. I'm not totally against Israel, but I just think sometimes too much support is given to them. And so there's just, it seems like she moves to the right in order to...
But not on social issues, really?
Not on social issues. And I think she's okay, but still, I don't
really
like the Democrats to move to the right anymore. And in order to give an alternative to Hillary, I think we should start looking at Russell Feingold, because I think he really is a Democrat who has stood up against the Republicans and really given an alternative to the Republicans, and I think that's really what we need. And I'd like to make just one comment about Condoleezza Rice, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Republicans are going to run her, because I don't think she can win in the South. So I really don't think.
I think you're probably right about that.
You know, that's the ultimate irony, because, of course, she's from the South.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank
great
you.
Talking to you.
You know,
Russell Feingold.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because Hillary Clinton and Russell Feingold, if my memory serves, had a big dust-up when she first got to the Senate. I believe she said something to Russell Feingold about living in the real world or something, and it was over an issue that Feingold had taken a particular position on that Hillary, I think, had taken a slightly more conservative position.
Right. Well, thank you for all your calls. Now we are going to solicit some calls from people who are in New Jersey at the protest.
Westfield!
There's a protest in Westfield, and if you're going, realize that, you know, it's changed. The location's changed. It was at the Westfield Armory, but now because the police want protests to take place as far away from the thing being protested as possible, but I don't know actually how far this is, but they're reorganizing at the corner of Clark Street and North Avenue across from the Lord and Taylor store. That was at 8:30. I imagine they're still getting organized over there.
Yeah.
If you didn't know that information, and if you're there now, we'd like to hear what's happening. We'll talk to you after this break. It's 46 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Let's land this thing at 51 past the hour. Mark Maron, it's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're taking calls from the protest. That would mean that people would have to be listening to us on their Walkmen or in their cars as they wait. We do have a couple of calls on there lined up. Right now, though, it is time. It is Friday. It is now, of course, time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
And, Mark, we got a dog for you this week.
What do you got?
Alaska Senator Ted Stevens may not care about the spoiling the environment of his home state of Alaska. In fact, he's in the pocket of the Bush administration when it comes to drilling for oil any place the big companies want. Yet Ted Stevens took time from his busy schedule to shill for other big corporate interests, specifically the over-the-air television and radio broadcasters. Senator Stevens says indecency guidelines that apply to traditional broadcasters should also apply to subscription services like cable and satellite.
Mm.
The argument? Most viewers don't differentiate between regular and pay television, so they never know if something obscene might sneak into their living rooms. There are hurdles to overcome, to be sure. The FCC doesn't currently regulate pay services because, well, people pay for them.
Yeah.
So who would be in charge of enforcement? Then there's the matter of a 2000 Supreme Court ruling that said Congress violated free speech rights when it allegedly tried to protect children from sexually oriented cable channels. None of this, of course, troubles Senator Ted Stevens. Not even FCC Chair Michael Powell's opposition to his scheme is getting in his way. That's why Ted Stevens' attempted invasion of our living rooms makes him the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week. Yeah.
All right, here we are. We got phone calls from the protest. We've got Adam at the protest right now in New Jersey. What's up, Adam?
Hey.
Well, I'm on the corner here, Clark Street and North Avenue. The Westfield Police Chief is out here trying to move
one of the trucks out here that they're going to have the press conference on and saying that we're in the middle of the crosswalk.
So how many people are out there to protest George Bush's you know, Social Security plan out there in Jersey?
Well, there's a police state action going on right now. We've got the police that are trying to move us out of here and move the trucks out of here. Why do we have to move, officer?
Because that's the law. This crosswalk, if a child gets hit in this crosswalk, sir, should I hold you responsible?
All right, so if he moves back, then we're okay then.
He has to be 25 feet from the crosswalk, legally parked in a parking lot.
Can we get towards the armory? Is this a police state?
Come on, walk.
Wow!
Wow!
So is there any physical violence going on?
No, but his head is turning red.
Oh yeah! Oh man! So they're just trying to hold you on civic disobedience.
Well, 25 feet from the crosswalk, kind of stuff. That's really nitpicking, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I think that there's the major issue here is a traffic violation. I don't know.
So how many people are there?
I'd say at least 200 right now.
So there's about 2,000 people there. That's a lot.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for calling.
A bunch of us have a W with a slash through it on our chest, and about 10 o'clock we might strip and run past the armory.
Okay. Well, be careful, Adam.
Yeah,
Watch out for those cops.
And stay out of those crosswalks,
Adam. All right, let's talk to somebody else. Mary is at the protest. Good morning, Mary.
Yeah,
you okay?
Hi.
Are you all right?
Hi, Mary. You all right?
Yeah, we're fine. We're fine. We're moving. The bus for change is moving.
Ah. Why are the police making you move, Mary?
I'm sorry?
Are the police making you move?
Yeah. The bus is now pulling out, but nobody's on the bus. They're just moving the bus. The people are just being strung out down the sidewalk.
Yeah. How many people do you think are there?
I'll give it 150.
So about 15,000 people.
There are three young women from Westfield High School here, and one of their signs says, Bush can't even spell Social Security.
Whoa.
I'm glad that the high school people are out. That makes me happy.
Yeah.
1010 Wins was here, and TV 47 was here, and there's a bunch of cops here now.
Well, we appreciate you, Mary, for letting us know exactly what's going on by broadcasting with us live from the protest.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day for it. Come out.
Okay, thanks,
right.
Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
We're just talking to people who are out in New Jersey. They are at the corner of Clark Street and North Avenue. It sounds like they're moving now.
That's in Westfield.
Westfield, New Jersey. You can go out there if you'd like to protest Bush. He's somewhere in the area. Probably around the corner a bit, but you know, that's pretty exciting to hear that over the line. You know, there's that moment
you
where
you got to move. You're 25 feet from the crosswalk over here.
Be careful. Traffic's backed up. There's close to 100,000 people at the corner of
Clark and North. And they're moving fast because it doesn't look like the cops are going to let them stay there.
So given that there's 200,000 people there, that it probably might be hard to you might want to be give yourself a little time with 300,000 people at the protest. It's going to make it a little difficult to get through.
Half million, a lot of folks.
So, okay, there's the fax machine. That's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. One, to protest Bush's Social Security plan, organize Million Old Man March for June or August. Got to give yourself some time on that one. Two, now that Martha Stewart is out of jail, persuade her to attack Bush's Social Security plan. See what happens when you put your faith in the stock market. Three, to celebrate Women's History Month, hang huge blank canvas in nearest federal building. Call it America's Female Presidents. Powerful. Four, Sunday is Rob Reiner's birthday. Sorry, that's Governor Rob Reiner. Huh? Anyone with me? Who's with me? Governor Rob Reiner. All right. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Yeah, I got some commandments I'd like to see posted in public buildings. Thou shalt not rip me off. Thou shalt stay the hell out of my business. Thou shalt not make commandments. What do you think about that, man? Wake up, sheeple. The church is the stake. Be careful out there. Those 500,000 people protesting Bush in New Jersey, be careful.
That's right. Next thing you know, it'll be a million man march over there.
That's good. Just went up to 600,000. My God, how are they managing it?
I don't know.
Good show, Riley.
Good show. Monday, we're going to be talking about the congressional agenda for next week with Sam Rosenfeld. Have a good weekend, Marin.
You too, Mark.
This is Air America Radio. It's called